I was very tempted to ask what was happening with the voice of the tower, but this didn't seem like the right place or time. I was a little surprised when Jin appeared in the room, not far from where I'd teleported in. What would have happened if we'd rung our bells one after another? Could people be teleported inside each other? I shook my head, dismissing the disturbing thought. Jin folded his arms at me.
Marissa was supposed to be in here. We already swapped. I was hoping to get Sarah some real muscle, but I suppose you'll have to do.
I rolled my eyes at his teasing.
Your confidence in my abilities is overwhelming.
I stood up and headed to the exit door.
What should I know? We handled the shadow monster.
Jin lifted up the monocle I made him.
Works.
I blinked. I hadn't expected invisibility detection to work on that shadow creature. Considering it could pass through walls, I figured it was some sort of plane-shifting effect. Not that I was complaining. I wanted to ask for more details, but Sarah was waiting.
Anything else? We opened the other door this time as planned. Might be even worse than the fire room. And it ate the key.
Oh, perfect. We'd been hoping that other room would be easier to handle than the fire statues. Apparently we'd gambled poorly.
Details? No imminent danger. Sarah will show you what we found.
I nodded, waving to Jin and exiting the room. I drew my sword before heading into Sarah's entrance. It never hurt to be prepared. I felt my stomach lurch as I appeared in a familiar chamber. The setup was similar to what I remembered. Lit torches on the walls, a sealed container sitting in one corner, and a huge fountain in the center. The key had already been removed from the fountain. There were only a couple differences from when I'd last left the room. One was the room that they'd chosen to open with the key, as Jin had already mentioned. The second was Sarah's presence in the room. I hadn't had her with me last time I'd gone in here. In fact, I'd never worked with her in any major test. We'd done some minor team activities in test class, but nothing of any significance. She shot me a raised eyebrow when I appeared. I shrugged in reply.
We already stole Marissa. I hope you're not too disappointed.
I could get a wig, maybe talk with a country accent. Sarah sighed.
You barely pass for Corin Cadence, let alone anyone else.
Ouch! I raised my free hand over my heart.
I'll have you know that I almost considered participating in a play once. I'm practically a professional.
Clearly.
In the meantime, let's focus that professionalism on actually finishing this.
I bowed at the waist.
Your wish is my command.
She jerked a thumb toward the open door.
Get a glance at that.
I walked over to the now open door to an adjacent chamber. A long red carpet trailed across the center of the thin room. My eyes narrowed at the style. It brought back unwelcome memories of the tower room where Katashi had appeared. The carpet served as a trail, leading directly to a throne woven from vines. The throne was far too big for a human. It looked like it was designed to accommodate something on the scale of an ogre, but no creature sat atop it. Instead, a golden crown glittered in the center. The path to the throne was maybe 60 feet, much longer than the distance across our current room. The room was thinner, however, maybe 15 feet in width. The sides of the room, basically the whole area off the red-carpeted path, were enshrouded in vines covered in thorns the size of my fist. I ground my jaw just looking at them. They weren't moving, but I could imagine them writhing around like snakes. The danger seemed pretty straightforward. Something in that room would trigger the vines to attack. Narrowing my eyes, I thought I could see a couple more glimmering objects within the vines somewhere. Possibly secondary objectives, or maybe the true objective if the crown was a decoy. Is there a key anywhere? I didn't see one, but maybe it was in that tangle of vines somewhere. Interestingly, I didn't see any doors within the chamber. Maybe there was one hidden behind the vines? Or maybe this direction just didn't go any further and our objective was to obtain something inside. I turned my head back to Sarah.
Seems like the vines are designed to attack.
Sarah chuckled.
Obviously. Anything more creative to contribute?
I shrugged, turning back toward the room. Nervously, I glanced at my necklace. I hadn't used any mana yet, but I had an obsessive need to check. 46 of 46. I was fine. I turned on my attunement. Just for a moment, everything glowed. I'd almost forgotten that virtually this whole place was some kind of magical construct or illusion. After a blinding moment, I shook my head and focused, filtering out the ambient glow to focus on the things with significance. The crown glowed brighter, and so did a spot on the rear wall to the left side of the throne. A false wall, maybe? The floor directly in front of the throne was also glowing. A trap, perhaps, or a passage into another room. I spotted three glowing objects within the vines. All the way in the back right corner, a huge greatsword was propped up against the wall. It was about as far from the entrance as it was possible to get. Toward the middle of the room on the left side, something small was glowing on the floor. A key, if I had to guess. Another glowing object was just inside the door, sitting on the floor just inside a layer of vines. I couldn't quite make it out, but it was roughly dagger-sized. I turned off my attunement, turned back to Sarah, and relayed my findings. I checked my mana again. 45 of 46. I need to stop being so obsessive about checking my mental mana. I'm not in any danger using it a few minutes here or there. I told myself that routinely, but it didn't help. Sarah raised a hand to brush a stray hair out of her vision. Okay, that's actually pretty good to know, because we're going to have to make some choices. As soon as you step in there, the vines start moving in. They grow an inch or so every time you take a step. I bet it's designed so we can't get everything before the room fills up with vines. I folded my arms. How much did you test that already? Don't look so irritated. We only took a couple steps in there. They didn't reset after we left the room, but they haven't grown any further either. I scratched my chin. You try setting the vines on fire? She shook her head. Not yet. We had a feeling attacking the vines might make them get worse, but it's probably going to be necessary if we want to get those items you noticed. Do we actually want those things? They could all be traps. Classic temptation strategy. The real reward is the crown right in front of us, but if we step off the trail, we get eaten. She shrugged. Problem is, we don't exactly have a label on the room to tell us the intent. It could be a virtue test like you're describing, or it could be a test to see if we're easily distracted by the obvious solution and miss the thing we really need, the key, or the glowing wall. Why'd you try to get Mara? Sarah waved toward the throne. The vines grow when they detect a step, as far as we could tell. A guardian like Marissa could jump halfway across the room, and it'd probably only count as one step. I scratched my chin. Not a bad idea. Can we do something similar with just the two of us? Sarah winced. I thought about summoning my Carvenzi and having him fly across the room, but I've been trying to hold off on summoning anything in here. Both because I don't know how they'd react to a fake tower, and because I want to conserve my mana. I didn't know much about summoned monster behavior, but that sounded like a reasonable concern. Still, we didn't have a lot of good options available. I think we should try it. I don't have a better solution, unless you want me to try to blast you across the room with my gauntlet. Funny, but no. All right. I'll take a shot at this. Sarah took a deep breath, glancing from side to side. Carvenzi, I summon you. The Carvenzi appeared at her side. It was a little startling. When I was younger, I'd always expected summoning to have some kind of flashy special effect like a puff of smoke or a column of fire. Nothing like that happened. One moment, the space next to her was empty. The next moment, bam, Carvenzi. And he looked bemused. You again? The winged figure crossed his rather formidable arms, glancing around. And what is this? It looks like the serpent spire, only assembled by a child. You're not far off, Sarah smirked. This is an academic test, designed to look similar to the tower. We're trying to get through as many rooms as possible. We have very little information. She pointed into the room with the throne. Those vines grow when we step inside, so I figured a flying creature like yourself might be able to retrieve the things we need without triggering it. I don't feel like it. The Carvenzi turned his nose upward. Sarah and I both gawked at him. I glanced at Sarah. Are summoned monsters supposed to do that? She shook her head vehemently. I don't think so. The Carvenzi sighed.
So rude. I'm right here, you know.
Sarah wiped her forehead.
I knew this was a bad idea.
I extended a hand toward the Carvenzi. I'm Corn Cadence. We haven't met, but I watched your work in that arena. Really quite impressive.
The Carvenzi turned his head, glancing me up and down before focusing on my outstretched hand.
Really? I grinned.
Really? We could use someone with your skills to help with this test. And not just with the flying. I'm pretty sure some of the spells you cast in there were stronger than anything I could do on my own.
Sarah gave me an inquisitive look, then turned back to the Carvenzi.
Will you help us?
He turned toward her.
You, miss, were quite rude to bind me without a discussion. But given that I'm aware that you were mid-battle and clearly out of your depth, I'm willing to put that aside, provided you're willing to negotiate a real contract.
She narrowed her eyes.
Can you even do that? You do know that you're a temporary copy, right?
The Carvenzi laughed.
Far better than you, child. It's somewhat disconcerting to know that my lifespan is limited by your whim, and your available manner, and not feel any fear about it. I know I should have self-preservation instincts, but for some reason, I feel the urge to protect you instead. An element of the binding spell, of course. I have no real attachment to you.
Lifting a hand, the Carvenzi looked upward, taking a breath.
There is not, however, any part of your spell that prevents me from thinking about my true self's interests. You could compel me to take an action against my will. It is already an effort to resist your suggestion of what I could do to help you. But if you'd rather make an ally than compel a duplicate, I may be willing to offer you a more permanent arrangement, Sarah Cadence.
Sarah folded her arms.
And how would you know my name? When another version of me was summoned to fight you, Miss Theas told me a bit about both you and your partner. I retain those memories, as well as the memories from the previous instance in which you summoned me. I will continue to accumulate memories when you summon me again, but your version of me is now distinct from the version contracted with Miss Theas, and thus I will not gain any memories from her subsequent summonings.
I pointed at the room. Okay, this is fascinating. Really, it is. But we have a limited amount of time on this test. Can we discuss the summoning theory in more detail later?
Sarah raised a hand to silence me.
This is important, Corin. If I'm going to make a contract, that's going to affect me long term. You may want to go in there and start working on that room while the Carvenzi and I discuss.
She frowned, turning her head upward toward the Carvenzi's.
Do you have a name?
Ah, you finally ask.
The Carvenzi looked down, meeting her gaze.
You may refer to me as Vaniv.
He folded an arm across his bare chest and made a formal bow, nearly smacking me with a wing in the process. A pleasure to formally meet you, Vaniv. Now, please tell me why your true self would benefit from me making an arrangement with a copy.
Ah, an excellent question. A mere copy could not normally negotiate on behalf of their true self, but I am a sorcerer, you see, and if we make a contract, I am quite capable of extending that contract back to the real Vaniv. You would then feed mana to him continuously. I'm sure you understand the process. In exchange, you would gain access to my true self's more formidable abilities. And, of course, long-term access to this personalized copy.
Sarah ran a hand through her hair. For someone without an instinct for self-preservation, that sounds remarkably like a plan from someone who doesn't want to die.
The Carvenzi grinned. I said I didn't have the urge to survive. Intellectually, however, I can still act on the knowledge of what I know I should want.
I wasn't kidding when I said this was fascinating information, but it also wasn't getting us any closer to finishing the test, and minutes had already passed while they negotiated. If I had to guess, it would take at least a few more to come to specific terms. I didn't know a lot about summoners, but I did know that they had to negotiate how much mana they'd be feeding their summoned entities, the length of the contract, and some other details. So, I was on my own for a bit. I took a step closer to the throne room. I needed to make some decisions. My goal was to minimize the number of times I made contact with the ground, assuming that was how the room decided how much the vines should be growing. Can I climb on the vines? I stood at the doorway and looked at them. The vines varied in size and thickness, but they all glistened as if wet. That'd make gripping difficult, so that route was probably out. Running jumps, maybe? I dismissed that quickly. I'd have to take several steps each time to get a running start. Even if I could jump over small sections, it wouldn't be efficient. Blast myself off the ground with the gauntlet's transference bursts? No, that's a terrible idea. I just hurt myself. I didn't have a great solution. We did still have a return bell, so one of us could have tried to switch back out with Jin, but if he had a great idea, he probably would have used it already. Does the room only react when a person touches the floor? What about items? That was an easy enough test. I fished a copper coin out of my bag and flipped it onto the floor of the room. No reaction from the vines. Okay, now I'm getting somewhere. Can I make something to stand on? I considered throwing the box and using that as a platform to jump on, but just one platform wouldn't get me very far. That cage that was around the fountain, maybe? I walked over to the fountain, stepped onto the side, carefully avoiding splashes of the acid. I sheathed my sword. From there, I hopped onto the side of the cage and started to climb.
What are you doing?
Sarah had turned toward me to stare.
Was going to cut this thing down and try to roll it into the next room. The floor doesn't seem to react to inanimate objects.
Will that even fit through the doorway?
I glanced at the doorway, then back to the cage, measuring with my eyes.
Probably not.
I hopped back down, narrowly avoiding falling in the fountain. When I stumbled, I tried to make it look intentional.
So are you two done?
No, but this is embarrassing. Vaniv, we've got a time limit. Can we please finish this discussion later if I promise to resummon you to conclude our talk soon?
Vaniv scratched his chin.
Within the day.
Agreed.
Sarah extended a hand, and Vaniv clasped it at the wrist.
Now, please assist us with handling this test.
It does look rather amusing. I do not believe I can carry you both while in flight, if that was what you had in mind.
Can you carry just one of us?
For a short distance. My wings are not meant to bear a large burden.
Sarah pointed at me.
Take him inside. You can put him down next to the throne.
Oh. Of course, I have to be the one going into the trap. Vaniv picked me up like he was cradling a child. Given our difference in size, I suppose it wasn't that surprising, but it was still a little embarrassing. I felt surprisingly little when his wings beat and carried us over the floor. No rush of wind. We were indoors, after all. His stone muscles, were they literally stone? Barely seemed to twitch in response. Once we were hovering, he floated us into the room. The vines didn't seem to respond, which was good. We'd only hypothesized about the floor triggering them. He was breathing heavily by the time he set me down next to the throne. The vines noticeably twitched and pushed in further when my feet hit the floor.
So, how's this work? You take the crown and you win?
I frowned. We're not actually sure what the objective of the room is. The crown is the obvious prize, but I'm guessing what we really want is something hidden in the vines. Like that shiny thing over by the door.
I pointed at the small object that I'd seen from the doorway.
If this is anything like the tower, there are probably multiple things you'd want in here.
Or nothing.
Well, we're probably timed, so I'm going to see if this does anything.
I grabbed the crown. The door to the room slammed shut. I caught a flash of gold out of the corner of my eye. In a rare display of competence, I kicked myself backward off the throne and onto the floor, pushing myself out of the way of the projectile. As I pushed myself off the floor, I realized what had nearly hit me. The golden greatsword that had been hiding in the vines in the back corner. And as I rose and turned toward where the sword had flown, I saw a new figure. 9 feet tall, clad in armor of golden leaves. His face was covered by a steel mask that instantly reminded me of Karras, but this one covered every inch of skin. He held the greatsword in a single hand, while the other arm pointed toward me in accusation.
You have my crown.
His voice had force. It reminded me of the pressure I'd felt in the air when I'd encountered Katashi. My knees wanted to buckle, but I held steady. Vaniv was still hovering above me. Huh. He looks sort of dangerous. I lifted the crown. I'd managed to hold on to it when I dodged the sword. I'm pretty sure that's supposed to be a representation of the tyrant in gold. The armored figure tilted his head downward, his eyes burning, and by that I mean his eyes were literally fire.
You insult me. I am no mere representation. The crown is mine.
I flinched, considering as I turned my gaze to meet the Titanic King. I meant no offense, Great One. If the crown belongs to you, I will gladly return it. I didn't think the scenario would support something that easy, but hey, why not try?
You are wise to acknowledge my greatness. Return the crown, and I will make your end painless.
Yeah, not going to go that route. That's a very friendly offer, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to decline. A moment of turning my attunement on, and then back off, showed me that both the crown and the tyrant glowed brightly with magic. I set the crown on my head, hoping for a surge of power. Predictably, nothing happened.
Insolent fool! My patience is at an end.
The tyrant gestured with his free hand, and the vines surged inward toward me. I ducked, picking up my fallen sword, and lashed out at the closest vines. The blade cut true, severing tendrils and a splatter of ichor, but the vines were far too numerous. Vaniv, burn the vines! Then they were all around me, wrapping around my limbs and throat. My barrier didn't trigger to stop them from making contact. They weren't moving fast enough or applying enough force for it to register them. Not yet, at least. Vaniv looked down at me, raising a single gray eyebrow.
You want me to set them on fire while in them?
Just a little fire to clear them!
Vaniv laughed. I don't do little, kid.
He stretched out a hand just as I felt the tendrils begin to tighten. My vision turned white, and not because of the pressure. When my eyes cleared, there was a perfectly circular gap in the vines around me, maybe 10 feet in diameter. Charred remains littered the floor, but I hadn't felt a degree of heat. That was impressive. Not the intensity of the attack. I'd seen plenty of powerful fire spells. The degree of control necessary to make the flames exclude me. The vines that had wrapped around my body were still there. A foot or two of plant connected to each limb and around my throat, but they were disconnected from the main body now and had ceased to move. I brushed them away in disgust, turning back to the tyrant.
Okay, that was pretty good, I admitted. You want to light him up next?
With pleasure.
Vaniv pointed a hand at the tyrant. I saw the effect more clearly this time. A bead of flame manifested in the air right in front of the tyrant, then flickered as it detonated into an incendiary sphere. I should have known better than to hope it would be that easy. When the smoke cleared, the tyrant was unsinged. An echoing laugh emanated from the armored figure.
Your magic is weak. Your resistance irrelevant.
Vaniv balled his hands into fists.
Weak? You haven't seen a fraction of what I can do.
The tyrant began to walk forward with a deliberate slowness. He was maybe 20 feet away. It wouldn't take him long to close the distance, even at a slow pace. Okay, what was I missing here? How did people handle the tyrant in Golden Legends? My family had never been particularly devout, but the tyrant was a central aspect of our culture. Everyone knew about him. He'd conquered nearly the entire world outside of Caldwin. He was the only entity in the world with enough power to rival the goddess herself. And thinking back to the stories of heroes opposing the tyrant, they all ended one way. The heroes died. It was possible that trying to beat this guy in a straight fight was unwise. The problem? I didn't have any better ideas. I didn't have a bell on me. When I'd used it before, it had been left behind in the other half of the dungeon.
Presumably the others would have picked up the one that I used, and Sarah had the one that Jin had used. And unfortunately, Sarah was on the other side of a sealed door.
Beniv, you got anything bigger you can hit him with?
The Carvenzi grinned.
Of course. Buy me a few moments, would you?
That I could do. I raised my sword in a salute. The tyrant paused, then mirrored my gesture.
Huh.
Maybe there was something there. Was he going to fight honorably? I mean, enshrouding a guy in plants wasn't exactly the traditional definition of honorable, but maybe there was a way I could take advantage if he was going to be bound to some kind of rules. I'd have to keep that in mind. But for the moment, I charged. I hadn't had a good sword fight in ages. The tyrant brought his sword down in a heavy slash. I sidestepped, allowing the great sword to crash into the floor. It sliced carpet and into the floor beneath. A quick thrust from me. He stepped backward faster than I'd expected, avoiding the strike while dislodging the greatsword from the floor. The room was getting darker, but I couldn't pay attention to that. The greatsword whistled sideways, threatening to bisect me. I met it with a parry, which was a mistake. The impact force was staggering. I flew backward, plants deliberately parting around me, and slammed into the nearest stone wall. My barrier kicked in on that impact, but even the more advanced sigil I'd made wasn't good at softening kinetic force. I felt a moment of bone-shuddering pain as I cracked into the wall and fell to my knees. The tyrant turned to where I'd fallen and walked toward me at a leisurely pace. He was only steps away from melee reach. I lashed upward from my kneeling position and pushed on the sword's aura with transference mana from my hand. A crescent wave of kinetic energy leapt out of the weapon, ripping through the air. The tyrant met it with a swing of his own. For an instant, a sphere of force manifested in the air, and the tyrant fell back a single step.
Not bad.
I braced myself, using the saber to push myself to my feet. A terrible idea, and a great way to ruin a sword, and allowed myself a grin. I may have celebrated a little too soon. The tyrant gripped his sword with both hands, raising it above his head, and copied my technique. And even at a glance, I could tell the wave of cutting force that he'd sent toward me was vastly more powerful than my own. I didn't have a lot of room to move. The plants had cleared to let me hit the wall, thanks for that, plants, but they were still close enough to impede my ability to dodge, so I countered with something more experimental. I activated my demi-gauntlet's transference burst, but as the energy tried to leave the gauntlet, I grabbed it with my mind and tried to channel it into my sword. If I could combine the sword's mana with the gauntlet's, maybe. My gauntlet's blast slipped free, careening uselessly to the ceiling. The tyrant's slash caught me dead on. I heard a solid crack as the impact drove me back into the wall. My barrier had activated. I could see it flickering in front of me, a huge crack across the surface nearly the entire length of my body. From its fluttering, I could see that it had barely held against the strike. I wondered if it would have killed me, actually killed me, if I hadn't built myself a stronger barrier. That was not a happy thought, and I was tired of getting kicked around by a simulation. I pushed off the wall, gritting my teeth as I made a diagonal slash and pushed the mana at the tyrant. He moved to block, of course. I rushed forward in the attack's wake, moving my offhand. As he deflected my first attack, I threw the crown, and, as I expected, he turned his head to follow. Three quick thrusts, each aimed at vulnerable points in his armor. All three hit. None had any effect. There was no visible barrier, no sign of any magic, but I was hitting something harder than stone or steel. But I didn't stop. He turned back to me belatedly, swinging his sword in a lazy arc that forced me to take a step back. I raised my gauntlet and sent a burst of gray mana directly into his face. That staggered him, but only for a second. He swept horizontally, and I knew I couldn't parry it again. My barrier wouldn't take another impact with a wall. I blasted his sword with the gauntlet's transference function, arresting the blade's momentum just long enough for me to step back. Then, once out of range, I blasted him with gray mana again. A single chip fell away from his mask.
I tire of this foolishness.
I smirked. I'm just getting warmed up. Ah, the most traditional of all boasts. Not exactly creative, but it was a classic, much like stories of heroes being killed by the tyrant. Maybe that wasn't the best line of thought for my current situation, though. I raised my sword in another salute. I was getting used to his reach, and my hand was barely tingling from the use of the demigauntlet. Months of practice had bolstered my hand's mana to the point where I could use it over a dozen times without much difficulty. If he isn't invincible, and he is predictable, I can beat him. That was when he kicked me in the chest. I flew backward. It didn't carry the same impact as one of his sword swings, but it did surprise me, to the extent that I dropped my weapon. I ducked his follow-through swing purely on instinct. Disarmed, I rushed closer and threw myself at him, punching him with a burst of mana. He didn't flinch at the impact. Instead, he released a hand from his greatsword to grab at my arm. I pulled my arm back quickly enough, but that didn't stop him from responding with a swing of his own. The punch hit me dead in the face, and my vision swam. I hit the floor, feeling something wet on my face. Had he broken my nose? I rolled to the side, heading toward my fallen saber. I did manage to avoid a swing that way, but only as a consequence of the movement, not anything deliberate. The tyrant got to my sword first, kicking it further away. I looked up at him, wiping my face with my left hand. Yep, real blood. He raised his sword to strike, and a bolt of lightning slammed into his chest. Oh, so that's where the darkness was coming from. The ceiling of the room was covered in clouds. The tyrant shivered as the electricity flowed through him. The next bolt struck only a moment later, then the next. It might have been my imagination, but they seemed to be hitting a lot faster than what I'd seen Veniv using when he'd fought against Sarah and Derek.
Enough!
A green sphere of mana appeared around the tyrant, blocking the next bolt. A tiny crack appeared at the impact point, but I knew barriers enough to know the damage was inconsequential. How much mana did this thing have? The tyrant moved, faster than I'd thought him capable of, rushing toward Veniv. I wasn't idle. I crawled, yes, crawled, toward my fallen weapon, picking it up with trembling hands. As the tyrant approached Veniv, I felt the ground begin to tremble. The tyrant raised his blade, a golden glow manifesting along the surface of the weapon as the floor of the chamber began to crack. More and more bolts of lightning poured into the green shield, but even their accumulated damage barely made a dent. Veniv pushed out both hands, sending a wave of frost at the tyrant, but the tyrant cut right through the energy with an upward swing and then leapt into the air, his blade poised for a deadly thrust. Veniv pushed his hands outward, surrounding himself with an aura of electricity, bracing for the strike, but it never came. The tyrant, the throne, the vines, everything around us vanished, and the room continued to shake. Even the carpet disappeared. We were alone in a chamber of white stone, completely bare as the tremors continued.
Students, be advised that this test has been prematurely terminated. You will be returned to the briefing room shortly.
It was Professor Orden's voice, unmistakable as the real blood on my hand. A moment later, Orden appeared at my side. Take my hand. I sheathed my weapon, following her instructions.
What's going on?
I'll explain when you're all together. Brace yourself. Spirits of wind and air, carry us beyond this place. Teleport!
I closed my eyes. When I reopened them, I was back in the briefing room. My stomach still swam from the short-distance teleport, but it was nowhere near as bad as what I'd experienced when Orden had cast that bigger teleport spell that took me to her safe house, or whatever that place was. She released my hand and disappeared again. I saw Jin and Marissa already sitting on one of the couches, looking concerned. Marissa stood as soon as she saw me.
Corin, you're bleeding!
I nodded.
Took a tyrant punch to the face.
Jin frowned.
Harm should not be possible in this simulation.
I'd assumed that, too.
I think we have bigger problems to worry about.
Another tremor, as if to punctuate my words. I'd never experienced a normal earthquake. Both my home city of Hathridge and Beaufort, the city that housed Lorien Heights, were protected by environment-controlling magic. The vast domes over the cities were the most obvious indication, but the magic stretched deep into the earth, too. So if we were suffering from an earthquake, that meant we were dealing with something seriously bad. When Orden reappeared next, she had Sarah with her. She grabbed Patrick on the next trip, then Vaniv after that. I was a little surprised the summoned Carvenzi was still around after Sarah had been teleported, but hey, I wasn't complaining.
"This is a very unusual test," Vaniv noted.
With our group gathered, Orden turned to Sarah.
"You may want to dismiss your friend."
Sarah folded her arms.
"Why? What's happening?"
Orden folded her hands in front of her.
"The city is under attack."
Chapter 17. Assault. Sarah was, as usual, the quickest.
"By who?"
Orden glanced towards Sarah.
"Monsters from the tower. I don't know numbers yet."
"Oh, goddess."
Patrick took a step back, hugging himself.
"Is anyone hurt?"
The professor turned toward Patrick.
"It's an attack on the city. Of course people are being hurt. Pull yourself together, Mr. Wayland. You're supposed to be an attuned. Act like one. Panicking will not save any lives."
Patrick nodded, but he was still shaking.
"Yes, of course, Professor."
I walked over and nudged him on the shoulder. My hands were trembling, too, but being next to each other seemed to help us both. Sarah folded her arms.
"What type of threats are we looking at?"
"A broad variety of monsters, including a swarm of Carvenzi."
Orden turned her head toward Vaniv, narrowing her eyes. Vaniv put a hand over his chest.
"I don't know what you're implying, Madam Professor, but I have a strict no-attacking-cities policy."
"As humorous as that might be, your true self could be up there, and we can't have you carrying information back to him."
The stone figure stretched its wings.
"Fine, fine. I understand, but Sarah, we still have a deal."
She nodded.
"We do. And if you are willing to help against other Carvenzi, I may have a need for you again soon."
"That would be no problem. It would be no worse than humans killing other humans, after all."
His nonchalance at that particular idea chilled me more than I could put into words. Sarah waved a hand at Vaniv.
"Very well, then. Carvenzi, or rather Vaniv, I dismiss you."
A glowing circle of runes appeared around Vaniv, and he bowed at the waist as he vanished. Orden turned back to the group.
"Good. With that threat addressed, you should all head to the shelters immediately."
Ugh, I did not want to go to those again, especially not after how useless they felt last time. Marissa spoke up before I had a chance.
"Begging your pardon, Professor, but I'd rather be fighting than buried in one of those tombs."
A little more direct than I'd have put it, but it echoed my fears about the stability of the shelters pretty well. Patrick turned his head toward Marissa.
Mara, are you sure that's a good idea? I know you're stronger than the rest of us, but..."
Marissa raised a hand to scratch the back of her head.
"It's not that, Patrick. I'd just rather get stabbed than crushed to death. Besides, better to have Orden next to us than try to run on our own, yeah?"
Patrick paled a little. Orden chuckled.
"You seem to have a misconception, Marissa. I'm not going to be going anywhere near that fight. Being a teacher does not make me equipped for battle with monsters, nor would I be in any condition to fight, even if I was properly trained for it. Who do you think has been making illusions and constructs for you to fight for the last hour?" I folded my arms.
"If you made that tyrant punch me in the nose, you owe me a clean uniform."
The professor turned to me, grimacing upon taking in my face.
"I may have calibrated that construct a bit too strong. It was necessary to give him a degree of solidity to..." "Never mind. It's not important. I'm afraid I've already sent the menders away to the shelter, but I could teleport you to one."
I shook my head.
"No. This is irritating."
I could hear a wheeze in my voice.
"But I'm with Marissa. I want to fight."
Patrick turned and stared at me for a moment, then tightened his jaw. The door to the room swung open, and Professor Teft was standing in the doorway.
"Lyris, I need you now,"
Orden swung a glance in his direction, sighing.
If you insist, dear.
Dear? Professor Orden turned back to us. She opened her mouth to say something, then closed it, furrowing her brow. Taft folded his arms.
I don't like that expression.
Oh, hush, Jonathan. The adults are thinking.
Taft glowered at her.
Commander Bennett is waiting for us.
Orden's lips twitched into a harsh curve.
Let Jack wait. I need to properly direct the children. She snapped her fingers. Corin, when the monsters were scouting last time they were here, did any of them see you?
I nodded.
At least one of them looked right at me.
Good. Then you're not the target, which narrows the option somewhat. Jonathan, has anyone determined who is commanding the monsters yet?
Yes, but I'm really not sure we should be discussing this.
Humor me!
He folded his arms.
Word is that Katashi has been sighted just outside the tower. He's not attacking, thank the goddess, but if he's present, it's safe to assume he's controlling the creatures that are.
I admit I might have taken a step back when I heard the name Katashi. I hoped no one noticed. Jin was looking at me strangely, though, so I'm pretty sure he saw something. Orden steepled her fingers.
Perfect. I'm going to send you and Corin to talk to him.
Taft blinked.
Excuse me?
I almost laughed. I'd never seen someone manage to catch Taft off guard like that before. He actually stammered. Orden took a step toward me, releasing a hand to gesture for me to approach.
Come now, Corin. Time to address some past mistakes.
I sighed.
Will you be coming along with us?
Of course not. As I said, I'm not much of a fighter, and it'll be dangerous out there. I'll be going to talk to the Vice Chancellor, where undoubtedly he'll make efficient use of my abilities by having me wrangle more children into our lovely shelters.
I folded my arms.
Not exactly a fighter myself, Professor.
Oh, you have a sword. You'll be fine. Besides, you're going to talk. Fighting shouldn't be necessary.
I refrained from pointing out the contradictions in her argument. She was obviously already aware of them. I didn't know precisely what she was plotting, though. Was this another one of her little tests to see how I behave? I didn't think so.
Taft shook his head. What are you about, Lyris? Why would Corin have anything to do with Katashi?
Orden rolled her eyes.
Corin met Katashi during his judgment, darling, and walked out with his memories intact. He also managed to break three people out of a prison inside the tower. Do try to keep up.
Taft shot a glance at me, and I could sense the entire rest of the group turning to look at me.
Is this true?
Ugh. This was not the right time to be telling people about this.
That's a truncated version, but yes, one of my test rooms was a prison, and I opted to let people out of it. Turns out it might not have been strictly a normal part of the test. I'm still not certain what exactly happened.
Sarah tilted her head to the side.
Tristan?
I shook my head. It wasn't him. I would have told you if it was. She frowned, but gave me the slightest nod.
We'll need to talk about this later.
Orden stepped closer to me.
Right. Later is fine. For the moment, time is of the essence. If Katashi isn't looking for Corin here, he's almost certainly looking for one of the people that Corin helped escape. Seeing as Katashi did let Corin leave the tower alive, I don't believe he'll be hostile, and if Corin offers to cooperate, we might be able to minimize the damage to the school.
I wasn't sure I agreed with her logic. Katashi had been pretty distracted by Karis when I escaped. The fact that he hadn't sent anyone to eliminate me up to this point just implied that I was a low priority, at least in my mind. I didn't want to argue her point, though, because I did want to go, both to protect the city and because a chance to talk to Katashi might give me some real answers. I needed those answers. I wasn't going to let a little thing like the possibility of annihilation stop me. Marissa stepped up next to me.
I'm coming along, unless you mind. Rather be out there in the open to lend Corin a hand if he gets into trouble.
I'm going to send them directly to the tower, but fine if you insist. Any other children feel the need to keep Corin safe from nothing at all?
Sarah stepped over and nodded to me.
I'm going, of course.
Patrick's hands tightened into fists.
Fine. I still think this is insane, but I'm not letting the rest of you go without me.
A few moments passed. Jin didn't join us. He was still silently watching from the back of the group, his jaw tight, eyes narrowed. I felt a surge of relief that I wasn't going to be going out there alone, even with my disappointment that Jin, the first person who had stepped in to rescue me in something resembling a real fight, wasn't going to help me this time. I hoped it wouldn't matter. Orden glanced at Taft. Anything else you want to share before I teleport you?
For now, the fighting appears to be constrained to the area directly surrounding the tower. The Soaring Wings are doing their best to keep the combat contained to that region, but Carvenzi and Gargoyles are emerging from the top of the tower and flying toward the Academy. Katashi was sighted on the eastern side, near one of the climber gates.
I wondered how he'd picked up that much information. The earthquakes had only occurred minutes ago. It was probable that the attacks had started sometime before the earthquake, but he still seemed very well informed about something that was happening a solid mile away. Did he have some kind of communication spell? If so, I needed to learn it as soon as possible. That kind of thing would be invaluable both in our tests and in real threats like this one. Eastern Gate it is, then. Children, if you are coming, join hands. She extended a hand to me and another to Taft. I took one and extended another to Patrick. The linking hands continued until Jin was the only one left outside, and finally, with the utmost hesitation, he stepped in. I breathed an audible sigh of relief. We'll be safe if we're all together. And Orden spoke. Spirit of wind and air, I command you. By the pact sealed between us, I invoke your power. Rise around us and within us. Carry us upon your ethereal wings to the place of greatest safety. Veiled teleport! My head swam, my vision blurred, and something slammed into my knees. When I regained my focus, I realized that something was the dirt. I'd lost my balance and fallen right after the teleport. I was blearily aware of people around me, but my hands were no longer linked with anyone. I retched, a combination of bile and blood. Fortunately, the others managed to get out of the way before I doused anyone's shoes.
Oh, for the goddess's sake, Lyris, just how hard did your construct hit him?
Teft's voice, probably. I couldn't really process anything.
I didn't think... Never mind. Corin, stop vomiting!
I turned my head in her direction. My best, are you reshing kidding me? Expression on my face. She sighed, offering me a handkerchief.
Wipe yourself off, then I'll give you something for the pain.
I took the cloth, wiping off my face, and then spitting some of the remaining acidic fluid in my mouth into it. With that done, I discarded it onto the ground. She could pick the thing up if she wanted it. My head felt like it was in a vice, like I'd gone too far underwater and my ears were popping from the pressure.
We don't have time for this.
I felt Orden grab my left hand, slipping something onto my pointer finger.
Channel a bit of your mana into that.
That was easy enough. I sent a pulse of gray into the ring. The ring warmed in response, but not to the point of burning. That warmth spread across my arm, flowing throughout the rest of my body.
What's wrong with him?
Sarah's voice. Teft responded.
Teleporting someone with a head injury is a dangerous prospect at best. Someone should have known better.
The ring will take care of him.
Orden again. I couldn't see her clearly yet, but the warmth had spread all the way to my neck, and I was starting to feel a tingling sensation on my back. By the time I felt the warmth spreading across my face, I was starting to feel a little bit better.
Healing magic?
I murmured.
Regenerative. It's not as fast as a direct healing spell, but it also doesn't require the same degree of precision to get it right. Direct healing spells are almost never used in items, since they can end up causing permanent harm. Regeneration, however, is quite safe.
Orden. Always lecturing.
I'm keeping this, I managed, in exchange for my best nose.
I heard a few laughs around me, which was good. Orden didn't join in the levity, but she did respond.
Your humor seems intact, at least. Good. Not a useful tool with Katashi, but it implies you're awake enough to talk. With that, I should be going. You can borrow the ring until you're recovered.
I'm sitting down now. I sat, only then noticing the ring of concerned eyes around me. And, much more worryingly, the vast number of winged figures in the naked sky above us. And by naked, I mean that there was no environmental shield. None. I'd never seen the sky without a shield occluding it. It hadn't been disabled during my lifetime. Without it, we were vulnerable. Not just to rain and snow, but to a far more terrifying prospect. Invasion. Keeping the elements off of us was the practical application of the barrier, but it served a more important function on the international scale. It blocked a vast variety of foreign spells from getting into the city. Scrying, teleportation, artillery spells. It was an effective tool against both reconnaissance and direct attacks. And it was gone. I didn't even know how that was possible. Was it temporary? My head had already been swimming before the implications of that lack began to dive into the murky pool. I was so distracted that I didn't even notice Ordin teleport herself out of the area, leaving the rest of us behind. Patrick offered me a hand, but I shook my head. Not just yet. At least his hand had stopped shaking. Now that we were here, he looked calmer than I felt. My retainer frowned.
We're going to need to move soon. We've got company on the way.
I glanced around, taking in my direct surroundings for the first time since the teleport. My friends were standing in a defensive ring around me, facing outward along with Teft. And Teft. And another Teft. Simulacra. I really wished I could do that. Outside of our protective circle? Chaos. The tower itself loomed above us, a few hundred yards away. Hundreds, maybe thousands, of flying creatures were swarming around the upper levels, flying in a circular pattern. The nearest buildings had belonged to the soaring wings, the loyal guardians that kept us safe from the rare cases of monsters getting out of the tower. Their headquarters had been smashed to bits. Mizuchi, the hero's end, rose triumphant above the rubble of the largest structure. Her towering mass was unharmed by the dozens of armored attuned that still stood around her, barraging her with a flurry of attacks. Her serpentine body was even larger than I'd realized when I'd seen her in the skies above. It only took a flick of her tail to demolish a nearby tower. For every one of the soaring wings that still stood, I could see three or four more that didn't. They were bloodied and broken among the rubble, the latest victims of a beast of legend. They're dead. Those soldiers are dead. I shivered. This is insane. We could be next. How'd I let Ordin talk us into this? As I watched, she reared up, drawing in a deep breath as members of the wings scattered apart. I could hear a loud hum as blue sparks spread across her body, a glimmering aura coalescing in her mouth. A blue dome appeared around us. One of Teft's bodies was kneeling, maintaining some kind of defensive spell. Mizuchi exhaled. A voltaic charge of impossible brightness tore free from her mouth, ripping through stone and dirt and leaving a charred and smoking trail where it passed. The line of lightning grew in intensity, brighter and brighter, until a burning shockwave flashed across the area and forced my eyes shut. I felt the impact against our shield, heard the cracks spreading across the surface the moment before the barrier completely failed. When my eyes opened, I saw the two other versions of Teft kneeling along with the first, their eyes closed in concentration. They'd formed two more barriers, and only the last of them was still intact. We'd been hundreds of meters away from the epicenter of that blast, barely even in sight of the people on the ground, and it still probably would have killed us outright if Teft hadn't intervened. And all three versions of him were sweating with exhaustion.
"We need to move," Patrick said again.
I nodded and stood. Teft's last barrier fell, his two copies vanishing. Their mana had run dry. Marissa and Jin helped a still-shaken Teft to his feet while Patrick led the way. It wasn't hard to see our destination, now that I was looking. Katashi floated just in front of the tower,
his brilliant aura of azure extending so far that I had no difficulty locating him in spite of his physical form being dwarfed by the tower's size. Fortunately, he was hovering just in front of the gate. He hadn't taken to high in the skies like many of the gargoyles in Carvency had. Less fortunately, there were dozens of land-bound monsters between us and him. I counted about 20 Bargensi, a handful of humanoid-sized spiders, and a single orange-aurad minotaur. Is that a sunstone aura? I'm not sure we can handle that.
Got a spire guardian over there?
Patrick pointed out just as my mind processed it. Teft coughed and stumbled, falling to a single knee. Jin hurriedly hauled him back to his feet.
Nonsense, Jin replied. You have done enough, Professor. Rest and recover. You will do us a greater service later in this way.
Teft gave a weak nod. We continued approaching the horde of monsters without a plan. When they were about 100 yards out, I turned to Sarah.
Do you think they could tell the difference between Vanive and one of the Carvency in the sky?
No, but if you're thinking he could talk us through, it probably won't work. They're probably not smart enough to understand.
I nodded.
Got enough strength for whatever your mystery summon is yet?
She clenched her hands in the air.
I don't think so. Maybe, but I don't know if that would be the wisest idea here, even if I could manage it.
The Bargensi started moving forward to intercept us, the spiders right behind them. The Minotaur remained near the tower, only a dozen yards in front of Katashi. We had a bigger problem, though. Those hundreds of flying creatures above us had stopped circling and were forming up on our side of the tower.
Oh, that's bad, Patrick mumbled, pointing up.
No more time for debate,
Sarah folded her hands in front of her.
Vanive, I summon you!
Vanive flickered into existence at her side, his eyes widening as he took in the horde in front of us.
Oh, what is this nonsense now?
Sarah pointed up.
They look like they're about to dive. Does that sound right to you?
Vanive nodded.
Yep, you're pretty much doomed, sad to say. I would mourn you, but, you know, I won't exist.
Sarah poked a finger into his chest.
No time for banter. Go tell them we're friends.
He rolled his eyes.
There's always time for banter, little Cadence. But don't fret. I will, of course, come to your rescue.
Vanive took off at once, flying toward the disconcertingly massive swarm of flying monsters. Which just left us with the ones on the ground, now nearly close enough to strike. Patrick stepped up next to Sarah.
You got enough mana left for our new trick?
She nodded, grabbing his left hand.
Oh, yes.
Patrick grinned, turning back to me and Marissa.
Buy us a few seconds?
Marissa nodded. Then she charged. She was a blur of gold and white, her guardian shroud blasting her forward with preternatural speed. I couldn't possibly keep up with that. I drew my sword and cautiously followed her at a jogging pace. Marissa slammed into the first Bargensi with a punch like a runaway train. It must have weighed 800 pounds, but it still flew backward like she'd smashed a toy doll. Then she was moving again, jumping atop one of the spiders and slamming a boot into its skull. The creature crumpled as she leapt off it and kicked another Bargensi in the face. I think I was a little enthralled there for just a moment. And then I was in there amongst the monsters, swishing my sword out to slice through a Bargensi's leg. The enchanted sword cut cleanly through, crippling the creature, and I felt a pang of guilt as it howled in agony. I almost shut down. These weren't illusions like the things I'd been fighting during the school tests. That Bargensi's pain was real. Maybe most people told themselves that a monster's pain was just part of a convincing illusion, but I'd been reading stories about monsters taking intelligent actions since my childhood. I couldn't believe monsters to be less sentient than ordinary animals, and some of them seemed even more so. Meeting Vanive and hearing him try to barter for an extended existence had further solidified my view. Marissa slammed into me, pushing me out of the way of a monstrous spider claw. Fortunately, she danced out of the way in time to avoid taking the hit herself.
No dying, Cadence!
She slammed a fist backward, not even looking at the creature she'd smashed.
You've got a job to do!
I glanced back at the hero's end. the tower serpent still looming in the distance, violently lashing destruction in the next section of buildings. Marissa was right. While hurting these creatures felt viscerally wrong, the wrong of failing to stop the assault was a far greater one. I'd have to stomach the guilt to save as many.